Well, we have a lot to talk about, Taylor.
We do.
Not a week goes by where things aren't flying around. We got three big stories here. This is Dome Theory. We can pick and choose them a little bit, but the most pressing one we're going to hit on today is the Orlando plan unfolding to some degree. I don't want to call it falling apart, and I'm certainly still not rooting against it. I still see people on the Twitter line and fans in general who just frankly want to see this shut down, and maybe that's warranted. But I'm not rooting against this, to be right. Like, I think that's a place where a lot of people are coming from on this. Like, they think this is an awful idea. They don't think it's going to work. So they want to see it fall apart. I certainly don't. And there's a level of selfishness on this here, Taylor. We've talked about it. We want to see basketball. People in the media, knowing it's their jobs, are rooting for this to work big time and are advocating for it to work. Like, there is a level of selfishness to this. But on the other hand, there are some big concerns that are being played out, starting with Davis Bertans, who backed out 100% based on his upcoming free agency status. Now, his team is not going to make the playoffs. That's a big part of it. Trevor Ariza backs out due to a child custody dispute or time that he's going to spend with the child, something to that degree. So then you have three other cases. LaMarcus Aldridge, I believe Bojan Bogdanovic of the Jazz, and someone else I believe is injured as well. And then you had Avery Bradley backing out for a number of different reasons. So players are starting to step out of this. We're going to hear more. I believe Willie Cauley-Stein did as well today too, of the Mavericks. So quite a few players have stepped out of this. What's your reaction to this? I was expecting this. They're only going to lose about 90,000, depending on how much they're making. The higher end guys, especially, are only going to really lose like 90 to 100,000 doing this. So there really isn't a big economic reason not to if you don't want to go. But the names have definitely piled out, and a name like Bradley on the team that was the best in the NBA, I believe, right? They were better than the Bucks when it ended. They were the best or second best. Still.
Yeah,
championship contender.
Right. I think it's interesting. You and I have talked about it, and I think you make a good point. There is some selfishness on our end, just wanting to watch basketball. I've said it from the beginning. But I think that if this trend continues and there's an overwhelming sentiment within the players that it shouldn't happen. I mean, I was looking today that they're going to use law enforcement from all kinds of places to enforce the bubble. There's a bubble hotline that I heard about or read about.
We talked about that.
So it's like, do I want to see basketball? Yes. Do I think they've probably considered the safest ways to do this while also keeping in mind the ABC, ESPN, Disney connection? Yes. But honestly, it's like, if the players aren't comfortable playing, then I don't want them to play, because if you look at Florida, it's one of the worst states in the country for this. And you and I have had this conversation before. It's just, I'm always going to side with the players. And if players are feeling that this is wrong, that it shouldn't happen, then I'm on their side. But like Kyrie said on that conference call a couple weeks ago, if they can come to the right conclusion and make it happen, then so be it. I just want everyone to be as safe as possible. And honestly, it doesn't feel like this is as safe as it once seemed.
We did talk quite a bit about the Kyrie incident last week with Soap on Devin. Believe it or not, there really wasn't much development on that front and his take and clarifying what he wanted to see out of this. So we're still basically left on that point with what we heard from him over the conference call. And it seems like the league, the players are still moving past that. For the large part, it seems like they're going to try to do this. In fact, I think about 2 weeks from today, as we're recording this on Thursday, teams are going to start shuffling down to Orlando. We'll keep an eye on the cases. As you said earlier, Tom Westerholm has been keeping an eye on the numbers and everything like that. And I believe it was either today or this week, 750 extra cases in Orlando. And that's where you get that security detail. That's where the emphasis on the bubble is becoming even stronger. They didn't even want to call this a bubble 2-3 weeks ago because of how unpopular it was. And I looked at it, and I think others did too, and said, like, what are we doing if we don't have a bubble? Like, that's what's going to prevent the corona here. There's other mitigating factors too. You have staff coming in and out. Disney has said their employees aren't going to be held to the same testing standards and all those things as the league personnel is. So there's concerns, and I think you and others have said that even the security forces there bring a risk of spreading the disease as well. But you got to commit to what the league has done and what Dr. Fauci and other health officials have said is going to prevent the spread of the disease. Like, that is still my biggest point out of all of this. I'm pro players just like you, Taylor. When I hear players off the record saying they're concerned about the bubble, well, then don't go. And players have chosen not to go. There isn't a big downside to choosing not to go. I'm not going to rip anybody who chooses not to go. I think Bertans got ripped by a fellow player. I'm not going to do that. But don't just be off the record, leery of the one thing that's going to actually make this work.
I think it's a matter of sending the NBA into the state, which has been considered the worst for this the entire time. And that, to me, that seems problematic because, I don't know. It just seems these guys are clearly uneasy about it. There's so much tension around it. I mean, Justice Winslow tweeted or put on his Instagram story, one of the two, that the NBA and the NBA Players Association don't care about these guys. It's just about, you know, making the next dollar. And I think you see that with the emphasis on it needing to be in Disney, because obviously that's not coincidental. You know that. I know that. That's not coincidental at all. I just hope these guys are safe. I think that should be the number one priority. And if it's a situation where this is going to be completely unsafe for all these players, then I don't really know why you're marching ahead with it. That's where I stand. I just want the players to be as safe as possible. And if this can't be safe enough, if it's going to be a situation where these guys are getting tested day in and day out, and you know, numbers of people are going down every single day, and you can't have the product and you can't have the league that we're at least somewhat used to, a semblance of what we're used to, then I don't really know if you should take the risk. But you know what I mean? If these guys, they're all adults, everyone's, you know what I mean? Like, you can make that choice. So I just want the players to be as safe as possible, this to be a safe situation for everyone involved. That's where I stand.
100%. And my stance there is still that I think the league's doing what they can on that front. I don't think there's anything malicious going on here. In fact, Silver said this too. I'm not 100% sure how true this is, but there's a great cost associated with this for the league too. And let's be clear, the players want the money too. Like, there are a number of different players that need that money. And I've been tough on LeBron and the other types in standing up for them. Because if there's a labor stoppage next year, the LeBron types and all of them are going to have a very easy time sending out, making it through that. Other players, they're going to have to head off overseas. They're going to have to make some moves to try to figure out what they're going to do if there's a lockout next year. And that's right, where guys really are going to be in the position of animosity. We're going to have a little situation like the left where you're going to have lower level players, higher level players fighting, and then the league just sitting on the other side. It's going to get ugly, I think, if there's no league. Baseball's back, though.
Yeah.
The thought crossed my mind in the shower this morning that there's no Chris Sale, right? Because he got the Tommy John. Right. No David Price, he's out the door. So people in Boston weren't even...
No Mookie Betts.
Yeah.
Most importantly.
100%. People in Boston weren't really tripping, for lack of a better word, over the lack of baseball this year. But now they're going to be up there in Fenway Park starting next week for that summer training. And after all this fighting, all these back and forth offers, all it really took was a declaration by the commissioner to push those arguments into the next year and get the same move in, which I think everybody looks at and is like, where was this? They're going to do the DH in the NL. They're going to push a few experimental things, not as many as they could. I think AL East, NL East are going to be battling against each other, and it's going to stay within the confines of those divisions. But I'm excited about it because there is a level of craziness to the 60-game sprint. Our good friend Devin Fink pointed out that the Nationals were 17 and 29 over a 60 game stretch. That math is absolutely wrong. Yeah. But you get my point. They would have missed the playoffs if you picked a 60 game sample out of last year, and they went on to win the World Series.
So I think that might be my favorite moment of this show that we've had in the past couple of months. 17 and 29.
Well,
and
see what happens
math
when
is wrong in the middle of it.
This is what happens when you don't take the best notes. You just come in from a run. We're getting going a little late here.
I'm excited for baseball. They made some progress and came to a decision. Obviously, there's going to be people on all sides that are upset, and it's the same situation as basketball for me. I just want these athletes, these guys, to be as safe as possible and to do this as safely as possible, because at the end of the day, it is for entertainment and it is for a dollar. And I understand that a lot of people need that money. A lot of the players, like, it's not all, you know, roses for these guys. A lot of these guys don't have the money to sit there and miss an entire season. So I just, across all sports, I just want this to be carried out as safely as possible. And even though my baseball fandom has kind of withered over the past 2 years pretty quickly since the Red Sox won that World Series, and things have just kind of fallen apart, and especially with the trading of Mookie Betts, my baseball fandom's down, but I'm definitely excited to see some live sports.
Guy like Eduardo Rodriguez, just for an example, is going to get $3 million where he would have got $8.3 million. So the financial implications of a lot that has gone on here are substantial, just to put it lightly. Like, guys are losing a lot of money and they're still going out and doing their thing, traveling. Like, baseball has its own issues with how this is going to play out in terms of the coronavirus. I mean, the Red Sox are going to be going to Atlanta. They'll be going to Florida, I believe, does an AL. Yeah, Tampa. So, I mean, they're going to be going to some of these hot spots, and I don't know how well that's going to go. They moved the spring training out of Florida, Arizona, but they haven't gotten a lot of flack for their precautions, and they should probably be taking a double look at how this is all going to work out. They've made some, precautions, but it's definitely something where there could still be some trouble on that side as well. As I said, we have Alex Kennedy here. He's going to delve into some of these NBA issues. I haven't talked to him on here before, a prolific interviewer for Hoops Hype. And he has interviewed the likes of Kareem, current players, former players. I'm sure he's been in touch with guys throughout this pandemic, doing stories on what they've been up to, where they're headed off to. Your guy Jason Tatum expanded on his golf game.
He did. Grew his hair out, became a golfer. Well-rounded.
I believe
he's a well-rounded guy.
Athletic. All right, Taylor. Yeah. I think I'm going to see you later this weekend. Maybe we'll do a pod in person next week. No Music Monday this week, of course, but definitely check out our interview with Soap on Deb. You can find us at Real Bob Manning. Our audio boom page has a lot of the links up there. And we're about to talk to Alex. End of the show bonus as well. We're talking to Anthony Obas, our good friend, about the fireworks spree in the country. What's going on with that? I mean, he's at the heart of it in Harlem, so I want to call him up and get his takes on it. So that's what you have to look forward to in this episode.
It's tempting. You know, the entire NBA or 22 teams are going to be right in my backyard here in Florida. So, you know, you want to go cover the games and be part of that and, you know, be in the bubble. But it has been much different. There's no traveling. Usually I'm traveling a bunch and covering different games. We don't know when it's going to get back to normal either, you know, as far as media access, when fans can be at games. So it's been much different. You know, I've had to call on a lot of different players or media members or people that I have relationships with where I can just get them on the phone, either to have them as guests on the Hoopsite podcast or to do different interviews and articles. So it has been much different, you know, not being able to see people in person for quite some time. You know, finding guests and finding interviews and different article topics. It has been much different, but, you know, we have to adapt. There's still plenty of stories to be told. And that's one thing we did with Hoopsite. You know, we basically just shifted our focus to, okay, covering what the NBA is going to look like, what this season's going to look like. We did a few different articles, long form articles about how players were training at home and how teams were helping them and, you know, getting them tons of equipment and things like that, because a lot of these guys don't have access to a court or a gym. I think that's one of the things that has been interesting with all of this. A lot of fans, from what I've seen on Twitter and like the comment sections on our articles and things like that, I think they all assume that these guys all live in homes and have a basketball court in their home and stuff like that, because the superstar players have that. But there was one Eastern Conference strength and conditioning coach that I interviewed for one of my articles, and he said they didn't have a single player on their team that had access to a court, and not just, you know, at their home, but they didn't have access to any basket at all. You know, they had one player that was able to go work out at a court by his house, but then that court, they took the rims down, so he wasn't able to work out. So they were trying to find, they were sending these guys, you know, exercise equipment. They were trying to find tracks and football fields near these guys' houses to help them get some kind of workout in. And then obviously they were still able to get cardio and do some workouts at their house. But a team like that, where they had no one that had access to a court, they're going to come back and be so rusty. They're one of the 22 teams that's going to be resuming play. And then you have some of these teams out there, like the Lakers or the Clippers, where a lot of their star players have access to a court. I talked to Patrick Patterson on my podcast, and he said Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, Lou Williams, they all have access to a court during this time at their house. So it's been interesting. You know, we're finding different ways to cover this, but it has impacted the job a lot. And I don't know when it's going to get back to normal anytime soon. So we have to just keep adapting.
That's something I was keeping an eye on in the early stages of this, because I know from the Celtics, Jason Tatum didn't have that access. Gordon Hayward, believe it or not, I think that threw a lot of people off with his $35 million salary, that he didn't have one at his house in the Boston area. And there was that funny back and forth between him and his wife over whether they were going to get one or whether they needed one. They didn't feel like they needed one because guys could go to the facilities and just use them anytime they wanted. I know Doc Rivers talked about that too. He was like, you know, we had a guy who was out circling LA trying to find a public court, and we just kind of had to shut him down. That I found that whole dynamic so interesting, because I feel like if teams really wanted to, they could have found ways to get these guys to different facilities. And obviously we're seeing that more now, like players are scrimmaging, especially those higher level guys that, you know, putting that out there on social media, like people are in gyms, players have acquired hoops, but early on it felt like there was kind of, I don't know if it was from the league or what, but it didn't seem like teams wanted to show themselves out there playing and doing those things, probably from a PR perspective to some degree, not wanting to encourage that for other people. But that's changed to some degree, because now you're seeing guys on video, massive scrimmages, you know, none of that social distance. I'm not judging anything like that, but it has changed in the last few months.
Yeah, you're right. In the beginning, I think it was about, you know, trying to set a good example for people that are fans and everything. You know, there were a lot of players that were showing workouts in their home, but they weren't scrimmaging or anything like that. I know the NBA also was being pretty strict. You know, if there was a play, if there were guys working out, then they were shutting it down, and teams were enforcing their own rules. They were, you know, telling them, no, you can't hang out with other guys. I know, I forget who it was, but there was some video that had leaked about of three guys working out together, and the NBA and their teams kind of shut that down right away. So I think the rules definitely did change a bit. And I understand the players, they want to get out there, because if you're about to resume the season, and yeah, there's going to be that ramp up period where they have a training camp and they have, you know, exhibition games and then eight regular season games, then you're throwing in and you're going right into playoff intensity. So I get the concern, you know, players are want to get out there and they want to scrimmage and they want to make sure they're in shape, because the one thing that I've heard from a lot of players throughout this whole process, either on the podcast or different articles I've done, guys are concerned about the injury risk. They feel like if you go out there and you've just been working out on your own, even if you've been doing cardio and working out every day, it's so hard to mimic those game movements and game intensity. So when you get back out there and you're playing 5-on-5, if you haven't been doing it and for a while, and you know there's going to be a 4-month break from the time the season was suspended to when the season resumes, you know, we could see some serious injuries, especially if guys are if it's playoff basketball, playoff intensity. So I get why players want to go out and scrimmage. But yeah, we definitely have seen the stance of teams in the league change a little bit. I think part of that was, you know, when the facilities opened back up and the country started opening back up a little bit, you know, they became a little bit more lenient. But I am concerned about some of the injury risks here. You know, we could see some guys come back out there. And, you know, I'm talking about the guys that were training and still working out a lot. There's going to be some guys that didn't work out, just like we see during a lockout. You know, when teams come back and players come back, there's always some of those players that just think, okay, well, I can work out tomorrow, I can work out next week, and they keep putting it off, and then they show up and they're out of shape and they're trying to play their way back into shape. you know, with only 8 regular season games before the playoffs start, there's really not going to be a chance for guys to play themselves into shape too much. So I am concerned about some of the injury risks here. We could see some serious injuries. I'm hoping that, you know, the training camp period that the NBA put together, you know, limits that, but that is definitely something to keep an eye on. I know a lot of players are concerned about it too.
Yeah, we know it is from Davis Bertans backing out like he did within the last week. We now have 6 players for surgery or personal reasons or anything else that have backed out of this. It comes down to Willie Cauley-Stein, Avery Bradley, Bertans, and then the older guys, Bojan Bogdanovic, LaMarcus Aldridge, who we already heard about. And I believe there was one more, but those are the big 5 guys.
Trevor Ariza,
yeah, who did it for the personal reasons. Good catch there. I knew names were going to start flowing out. I was almost certain we'd see at least one major name, and players have health issues. I know JaVale McGee was the interesting one with the asthma there, but we still haven't heard anything from him on that front. But Bertans in particular was the one who drew some ire. I know from why can't I think of his name on the Magic there? Evan Fournier. Yep, Evan Fournier. You've criticized him a little bit for backing out. I mean, he admitted that it was mostly injury, contract related. Not a great sign for the Wizards that, you know, he seems to be ready to jump into free agency after they didn't trade him after the deadline. But he took a stand. He took a very public stance that he just wasn't dealing with this. He's had ACL injuries. And, that drew some ire from other guys. But frankly, Wizards, Suns, those are the 2 teams I look at. And I'm like, they really shouldn't be there. Like, this is the financial aspect of things where they're trying to get those regular season games in, meet those TV requirements. And Bertans is looking at it and saying, all right, that works on your end. If I'm going to get my end of this, I got to stay healthy and I got to get into the offseason. And frankly, we see guys do that every year at the end of the season when they're fading away and falling out of the playoff race. And I don't think anybody seriously thinks the Wizards have a chance to get into this race. Like, I'll tell you the truth, Alex. It took me 3 weeks to realize the Suns were going. Like,
yeah, it is shocking. I think part of that, and I talked about this on my podcast, but I think the league definitely wanted to get Zion Williamson, the Pelicans, in there. It does feel that way, you know, for the TV ratings and the fan interest and all that. So we see every team that is within 6 games of the 8th seed is going to Orlando to play in this bubble or campus or whatever you want to call it. But yeah, I actually talked to Breton's agent, and he was telling me that, you know, we did an article on Hoopsype where I interviewed him and talked about this decision. And he was saying, you know, if the Wizards were in the 8th seed, or especially if they were, you know, the 6th or 7th seed, then he would absolutely be out there. He would be playing because he's a competitor. But the stance from Washington has kind of been, look, you know, we're not going to make the playoffs. I mean, they're not saying that, but John Wall came out and said he's 110% healthy, and they've said, no, you're not playing. We're holding you off till next year. They've already continued. They've had Tommy Shepard, the GM, has come out and said this season about more than wins and losses. It's all about developing. So they've, you know, taken a pretty clear stance that this year is about the future, and they're not going to risk injury for a guy like John Wall, or they're not trying to make that playoff push as much as they are just being cautious. So I think that's kind of where that kind of factors into this too, where Bertans is like, okay, well then I'm going to do the same thing. I'm going to be cautious. And his agent told me, he was like, to be honest, it wasn't even a hard decision for us. He said, you know, he's about to sign the biggest deal of his life this offseason, not this summer anymore, this offseason. So we have to protect that. And he did say that, you know, he had an insurance policy. So if he were to get injured, he'd have a big check coming his way that kind of protected him. But I understand for him, you know, going into free agency, he's already had 2 significant ACL injuries. You know, if he were to have a career-ending injury, let's say, that he'd be kicking himself because he played 8 regular season games when his team didn't really have a chance to play in the playoffs. You know, it goes back to what Damian Lillard was saying. You know, we don't want to play in meaningless games. And yeah, you can make the argument, okay, well, if they win out or come close to winning out, they can make the playoffs. But, you know, I think most of us would agree that Washington doesn't really have a shot at making the playoffs, a realistic shot. So I can see his stance, and the Wizards seem very supportive. You know, he's a free agent this summer, so I'm sure they want to say the right things and keep that relationship pretty strong. So of course they're going to support him and back him because they're hoping to re-sign him. But yeah, it's possible he's played his last game with the Wizards. His agent told me, you know, he loves Washington and they're going to be the first team we meet with in free agency. But who knows? You know, it's possible that he leaves Washington. But it is interesting. He's the first player that's kind of made that financial decision. We heard Avery Bradley, Trevor Ariza, Willie Cauley-Stein, they all cited their family as the big reason. And, you know, they had different situations, but it was all to be around their family. Cauley-Stein has a son or a baby that's being born in July. So, yeah. And I mean, there's some players too that are going to be playing that are, I know Ed Davis is leaving his 2-month-old to go play. And that's got to be so hard too. You're missing the first, you know, few months of your baby's life because they're going to be away for, you know, potentially 3.5-4 months. So guys do have these tough decisions to make. But yeah, I have seen some of the criticism for, you know, making this a contract or a financial decision. It's hard to, you know, no one's going to criticize these guys for spending time with their family or if they're concerned about COVID. At least, you know, fans might, but other players and stuff wouldn't, and their team would be okay with it, I'm sure. But yeah, it's interesting to see the first financial decision. And I'm curious how many more of these players decide to back out, whether it's because of the health risks or because of financial reasons or their family. It'll be interesting to see, you know, how many players at the end of the day are backing out. But I think the NBA has a good plan in place. If a guy backs out or gets injured or gets sick, then they're, you know, their team is allowed getting in front of it.
I find that interesting, the insurance thing you brought up. And this has been one of the foremost concerns of the players, especially the Donovan Mitchells and Jason Tatum to a contract extension eligible going into the offseason, and that's normally something you have to do during the offseason. But I heard the league floating that they may allow teams to get those things done before Orlando. I don't know if there's any action moving on that idea or possibility, but it was interesting to hear Jason Tatum. It sounded like he was floating last week that maybe he won't go. And then obviously NBC Sports Boston had a report that he's definitely going. He's all the way in. So that was probably just a little bit of a balloon right there that he was floating to get that issue out there. Do you get the sense that that's going to happen, that you know, the Jazz are going to be able to lock up Mitchell, maybe the Celtics are going to be able to lock up Tatum before this gets going?
Yeah, it's a good question. I know that, you know, there was talk about them signing insurance plans or having, you know, an enhanced insurance plan to make sure that they were protected in the event of an injury or anything like that. But I mean, it does make a lot of sense if the teams could come in and some of these no-brainer extensions, it would make sense potentially to have them, you know, get locked up. I don't know if that is going to happen, but, you know, it does make sense. One thing that Bobby Marks and I talked about recently was that, you know, some of these guys may be hesitant to, you know, the only reason why a guy like Donovan Mitchell or Jason Tatum wouldn't sign that max extension is maybe because of the salary cap and what we could see happen. You know, if you sign that extension, then your salary is tied to a percentage of the cap. So if some of these guys have concerns about this, the salary cap next year, if they feel like it's going to drop significantly, Bobby, you know, made the point that we could see a player potentially sign a 1-year deal and then, you know, go ahead and sign a max deal after that. I don't know if that's going to happen. I haven't heard any players say they're going to do that or agents say they're going to do that. But if there's concern about the salary cap, that's one possibility. But I think with this situation, you're going to see, you know, the Donovan Mitchells and Jason Tatum's of the world sign these max extensions. The question is when, like you said, you know, if the agents and the players' camps are, if they feel secure enough with just the insurance plan, then maybe that is what happens. But yeah, maybe they would open that extension window. And because right, it's already screwed up in terms of the timing and the schedule. You know, usually teams and players have until October, you know, usually October 31st to sign that extension. Now they're going to have to change things a little bit. You know, does it become the deadline is the start of next season, or is there a new date in the off season where teams have, you know, they're already got to move that extension deadline a bit. So maybe they do get creative and allow teams to do that a bit earlier.
You brought it up. It's not everybody's favorite topic, but I think it's one that's very interesting for me to think about and you to think about as well, the people that are involved in this. So if people find interest in it, maybe if not, it's, you know, it's my show. What do we think the future of sports coverage is going to be? So when this gets started, they had the one game, I think it was one or two games, where the media was out of locker rooms. They were shutting that down. We weren't going to be able to hang around and lounge like you always did for decades now. That's been, you know, the centerpiece of sports media, is hanging out in the locker room, talking to guys on the side, just kind of being there, hearing things, and there, all that stuff. And people had different feelings about that. So that went out the door for about 2 days before the league actually shut down. And now when it returns, we haven't heard a whole lot about how it's going to function. I believe there'll be media members within the bubble. It'll obviously be limited. I know broadcasting teams have said that they're going to be back in their studios instead of being inside the venues. And this is all stuff that, of course, is going to continue into next year. I've heard the NBAPA has talked about how next year there's probably going to be no fans. So that's going to mean things for the media as well. And I get the sense that the days of the locker room are over. I don't think teams, the union loved it. They had obviously cut it down, the amount of time that the doors are open and all that. So I think this is just going to naturally flow into a new era of sports media. And, you know, reporters and everybody else are going to have to adjust how they do things. Have you thought a whole lot about that?
Yeah, you know, that's something that's come up throughout this period. You know, there's been conversations with journalists, and I'm part of the Professional Basketball Writers Association. So there are definitely conversations happening. As you mentioned, you know, when this was kind of first all starting, when COVID-19 was really picking up and before the season was suspended, you know, they shut the locker rooms down. And I know that people were fighting to ensure that, you know, that doesn't become a permanent thing, that, you know, they're going to open those back up. And I think the NBA does a very good job of understanding that access and that media availability does ultimately help them. You know, it leads to a lot of great content and, you know, gives fans a way to find out what's happening behind the scenes and hear from these players. They're so, and anyone that's covered a game or been at a game or anything like that, you know, things that happen in the locker room and the interviews that are happening back there, they're so different than what's happening at a press conference. You know, anyone can go watch the press conferences after a playoff game or even some regular season games. Certain teams do things differently. You know, if there's a press conference, I feel like it just goes so much differently than when you have an intimate conversation in the locker room with a guy one-on-one. You know, it's just so different. So I think the NBA recognizes that locker room availability is important. Availability is important. So I think eventually we'll get back to a point where those things are happening. It just has to be done in a safe way. I can't see them just completely saying, okay, well, sorry, media, especially when, you know, someone like me doesn't impact as much. I'll be completely honest with you, because, you know, a lot of my stuff that I do is phone interviews, podcast interviews, and I do cover games, and usually I'll do my interviews pregame before guys are, you know, because after the game, they're always just talking about that specific game and what happened that night. You know, pregame is when I can do a lot of my evergreen random questions that I like to get in. So for me, it doesn't impact me much, but I see these beat writers who they need something to write every single day, and they need that access that comes from the locker room. So I understand for them, it's even scarier, the thought of not being able to go in the locker room and talk to these players. So it'll be interesting. I think that's going to be a fight that continues to happen behind the scenes, or at least a conversation that continues to happen. With the bubble, it'll be interesting to see what happens as far as media coverage. You know, there was some reports about how the media is going to have to live in the bubble if you want to cover this, or you're going to have, you know, a second tier of media that are in the stands but don't have the same kind of access and are further away from players, so that, you know, you can't just basically break the bubble and get these guys sick. But it'll be interesting. You brought up a good point. I don't see, by the start of next season, there are some people saying, oh, they're going to finish the season in the bubble, and then next year is going to be normal. It's like, okay, next season, let's say we start it in December even. We push it back to December. December is not that far from now. So, and I don't think the world's going to be much different come December. So the thought of everything going back to normal, and I'm not just talking about from the media sense. I'm saying teams traveling from city to city, playing at their own arenas, in their own markets. I just don't know how that can work. You know, obviously teams have charter planes and things like that, so that does help. I will say that. But I don't know how you're going to keep guys from getting sick. There's so many people at games, even if there's not fans there. You know, if we just go back to normal and do things the way that we did before, there's still a ton of interactions and people at these games. So I don't know what's going to happen next season. You know, do we see some kind of bubble scenario next season too, where you have, you know, each division in its own bubble and then teams play against each other. That way guys aren't traveling a ton and you could still kind of make sure they're staying safe and not having contact with the outside world as much. Will players agree to that? I mean, now we're talking about a long-term bubble, even more so than, you know, just the postseason and 8 regular season games. So I'm curious to see what not only sports coverage looks like in the future, but what the NBA plan is for the future, because, you know, come December, if they're just thinking we can go back to normal, then I think that's a recipe for a disaster and we could just see the league shut down again or the season get suspended again, because I think that's how a bunch of guys test positive. So I don't know if the NBA has considered that yet. I think right now they're focused on just finishing this season. But when I've talked to people, I've brought that up and said, you know, the plan for next season is kind of, it's kind of up in the air still, but I'm curious to see what happens.
Don't tell that to the NFL. They think everything's going to be perfectly normal in September.
Yeah. How is that? I'm so confused by that. You know, I think, especially in the NFL where there's so much contact, you know, with baseball, I think it's very possible that they could be okay. But even still with baseball, we're still talking about traveling from city to city. And
yeah, we talked about that in the opener.
Yeah, I just don't know how that's going to work. I'm really confused by that, you know. And I get people saying, oh, well, you know, there'll be a vaccine by then. Vaccines take so long to develop, and this is a whole other conversation. But, you know, there was an article, I think it was the New York Times, was writing about how the typical process to develop a vaccine with academic research and, you know, trials and all this stuff to make sure it's not just going to hurt humans, because, you know, no one wants to rush to take a vaccine that hasn't been tested and all that. They were saying if the, you know, usual timetable for a vaccine would put a COVID-19 vaccine around 2032 to 2036. And that is terrifying because that's a long time from now. But obviously they're speeding things up. They're trying to do things differently. There's been some talk that there could be one next year. That would be amazing, but it still doesn't solve our problem of what we're going to do come December, or in the NFL's case, September. So I don't know. I'm getting ahead of myself right now. We're focused on finishing this season, but it's just something I'm curious about.
Hey, they wrote the book called League of Denial for a reason.
Yeah, it'll be interesting, especially with no fans too. Like, that changes your revenue. And again, if there's no fans next year, then you're talking about the revenue for next year changing too, which affects the salary cap and the luxury tax. And it's a chain reaction. So I don't know. It'll be interesting.
Yeah, I like the idea of the media thing, because honestly, there's been such an influx of media. You know, you got TV in there, you got reporters in there, you got, you know, bloggers in there at this point. Like, there was just so many people in there. Writing a lot of the same stuff, frankly, and just, you know, regurgitating a lot of the same stuff in those environments. This is really going to be a challenge to see who can do it on the outside a little more, you know, who can score the interviews, who can do the stories around the locker room and around the games and those kind of things like you've done. And, you know, you've really made a career out of doing that. So, like you said, this probably isn't going to affect you all that much, the way you cover the NBA. You've interviewed Kareem. You do the Hoop Type podcast. You know, you talk to players, agents, all these people all the time. You're so tapped in, Alex. How do you get to that point? Just persistence, you know, making those calls? Like, you know, you've always done it around the locker room and around the normal environments where people usually do their reporting.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the kind words. Yeah, I mean, I definitely try to put myself out there and meet a lot of players and agents and executives. You know, with players, I've had a lot of luck meeting them, you know, at the earlier points in their career. Some of the guys that I'm closest with are guys that I met when they were high school prospects or they were in college. And, you know, some of these guys, like a Damian Lillard or a Jeremy Lin, I wrote the first national article on them. So that, you know, helped build the relationship. And then whenever they did make it to the NBA, you know, they appreciated that. And, you know, my first article at Hoopsite 4 years ago, wow, the time flies, but it was with Damian Lillard. So, I mean, you keep these relationships, you maintain them. With agents, I've come to realize that agents reach out to you when they want something. Yeah. And there's certain times of the year where a lot of agents are reaching out and asking for favors. And there's certain times of the year where it's hard to get them on the phone. But, you know, it is what it is. But you just learn, you know, I think you have to, first of all, be at these places. You know, And even though I'm not doing a ton of my interviews in the locker room, I'm still at the games. I'm still at Summer League. I'm still at the Combine. I'm still at the draft. You know, you have to be at these major events because even if you're not doing the interviews there, there's so many networking opportunities. That's where you meet so many agents and executives and players. So, you know, you can have relationships with people over text messages and over social media and things like that. But to take those relationships to the next level, you have to actually sit down with them and be around people. So that's been something that I've been able to do. I've been fortunate enough that I've been able to travel and have different outlets that credentialed me since I was 14 years old, which I've been able to go to these different places and build those relationships. So yeah, I mean, that's been a key for me. I think another thing is, it's the type of content that you write and what you put out there. You know, I think the people that are, I think my style of journalism and what I try to do is explain things from different perspectives. So I'll talk to players about what it's like to be traded, or I'll talk to executives about what it's like to be fired or go through a free agency period and have fan pressure and things like that. So, or talk to agents about their career and what it's like. And I've heard this from a number of different executives and agents and players. I think they appreciate when their perspective and what it's like for them is put out there, because fans can understand a little bit more. So many of these guys, especially the players, people don't view them as people. You know, they don't view them as humans that have their own life and their own family and all that. They're just considered, oh, they're these superstars. They're these celebrities. We can't relate to them at all. They're basically video game characters. So whenever you are talking to guys about, oh, I was traded and my family had to move and I was away from them for this much time, I think they appreciate whenever the questions are different and the topics are different, and it gives people a chance to kind of see who they really are. And then with the agents and executives, we do so many behind the scenes pieces at HoopsHype where we'll take a certain process like the trade deadline, or again, you know, getting fired as an agent or things like that, becoming an assistant coach, and we'll kind of detail what that's like. And then I think it helps fan. I always learn a ton when I do those interviews and those articles. You know, I there's so much stuff I don't know about the NBA, and I'm super open about that. So I always learn a lot when I pick these people's brains. And then I think the fans learn a lot too, because these are stories that aren't really being told. And I think executives and agents appreciate that versus just, you know, asking players or executives the same question for the 500th time. They're not going to want to do the interview. They're not going to want to talk to you. And the fans aren't going to learn anything because they're saying the exact same thing, just maybe a little different way for the 1,000th time. So I think, you know, what kind of content you put out there and, you know, who you are, I think helps a bit too. If you're a super negative person and you're constantly bashing guys and you're not really being fair to them and you're just looking for the quick, you know, clickbait, let me bash this guy and destroy his career and, you know, call him out, that stuff, when you're actually around these guys and you're getting to know them and you know them as people, you're not, I don't think you're as likely to do that stuff, because you understand there's two sides to every story and you understand what they're going through and all that. So, you know, to answer your question in a super long way, I'm sorry. I think there's a number of factors. It's being around, it's getting to know these people, it's telling different stories, it's building that trust up over time. And then just being a more positive person, an open person. That's kind of been why I've been able to meet a lot of these people. But, you know, I still look at people like Woj or Shams and I'm just blown away by the amount of people that they know. You know, they're so tapped in and so connected. And you see these guys, I see them at the draft or at the combine and just, you know, working multiple phones, and everyone that walks by, they know them. Yeah, it's insane. You know, Shams, like, he sets up in the hallway at Summer League and every single person that walks by, he just knows them. And I'm just like, wow, like, it is incredible to watch some of these guys that are super, super tapped in. And I'm always just blown away by that. So I can't say I'm as tapped in as those guys. You know, I'm able to do some interviews and reach out to people and get them on the podcast and stuff like that. But, you know, Woj knows more. You know, Woj probably knows what I'm having for breakfast tomorrow. It's pretty ridiculous.
We don't have a lot of legendary media stories, I think, like some of the past generations had in terms of figures. But we'll definitely be able to tell the people we're teaching in the next generation about the Woj and Shams rivalry. That'll definitely stand the test of time as a legendary media battle. There aren't paper battles the way they used to be. There aren't all those different kind of things. But we had Woj versus Shams. I'll throw a quicker one at you. What's your favorite question you've ever asked?
Oh, my gosh. That's a great question. That's a hard question. Let me see. I like asking Let me think about that one. That's actually pretty tough. I like asking the kind of questions where you learn about a person's life. You know, as much as we write about basketball in a sport, a lot of my questions don't focus on the actual games. I've never been the kind of person that just wants to write a game recap or, hey, ask, you know, tell me about that shot you hit in the third quarter. That's never really been my interest. It's always more off-court stuff, learning about who they are as a person and all that kind of stuff. I would say my favorite one, whenever Kobe Bryant was on our podcast, and rest in peace, obviously, I asked him, I had heard so many stories about him doing these crazy things to get better as a player, like studying sharks and, you know, studying Bruce Lee and all these different things. So I asked him, you know, there's all these legendary stories about you trying to improve as a player and finding these unorthodox ways to do so. You know, what do you have any more of those examples of things that you've done that maybe people would be surprised to learn? And he told me about how he had actually met with a composer. I think it was John Williams was the name. And he's an Oscar award-winning composer. And he met with him and he saw the way that he led his orchestra and completely changed his style as a leader. And based on the way that John Williams is leading his orchestra. And it was just, he went into super detail and was talking about it and then said he went to training camp the next year and changed the way he led. And it was fascinating. So I like questions like that, that focus more on the off-court stuff and who they are as a person. But yeah, that Kobe interview was probably my favorite interview I've ever done. The fact that I was able to get him on the podcast, I mean, it was like a dream come true. 11-year-old me was freaking out. And he was just awesome. And I'm so grateful now that we had a chance to have that conversation. He was someone that I interviewed when I was a kid and he was so helpful and friendly. And I mean, this is kind of a funny story. Whenever I was a kid, you know, I would reach out to PR people and try to set up interviews with athletes either over the phone or just trying to basically get my name out there and get these one-on-one interviews with players. And I annoyed his PR lady. I was super persistent and, you know, sent more emails than I'm proud to admit. But then eventually, whenever they were coming through Orlando, she had said, hey, he's getting a key to the city. And he's doing this event for after school, this after school program, and he's helping kids. And I was like, okay. And I still to this day, I think it's kind of funny that he got a key to the city of Orlando. it's kind of random, but I went to the event and they didn't know how old I was. So I show up at the event and I'm a kid. I think I was 16 years old. And, you know, I show up and they were super friendly. And, you know, looking back, I wish I had told them because, I mean, that's probably the professional, respectful thing to do. But I showed up and they were super friendly and super helpful. Kobe, you know, gave me 10 minutes of his time and answered my questions. It was super nice. So to be able to come full circle and have him on the podcast years later, you know, that was my favorite interview ever. And I was able to thank him for being so gracious and helpful to me as a kid. So those ones are always cool. So that's my favorite interview. And then some of my favorite questions were probably in that one because I got a chance to learn a lot about him.
Mm-hmm. That's a great story, especially when you think about how this year started and what a year it's been. I talked about this in the opener a little bit, and it's interesting, you know, you have people pushing really hard for the league to come back, and you get it. Like, this is your livelihood. People in the media, they need this to, you know, have a career. There's been a lot of furloughs, layoffs, all that stuff. It stinks to see. And then, you know, there's people who are really ardent against it. They don't want to see the risk being taken. They think it's a dumb idea. You know, you have the financial reasons behind it, but when the reason's money, that's always going to turn people off if that's the only reason you're doing something for. And that is obviously a significant factor in why the league's pushing to get back. You have positive tests this week. Jokic, among others, you know, we're obviously weeks from teams going down and there's that quarantine opportunity. But again, that sends the critics alarm up. Or maybe we don't want to do this. You know, guys are getting corona and this isn't even in the bubble environment. Some players haven't loved the idea of the bubble. There's just been a ton of different takes, opinions. Even last week we talked about Kyrie's comment and, you know, what obviously ended up factoring a little bit in Avery Bradley's decision not to go. I still, and I've said this for weeks, I'm not sure it's going to happen. Like, there's a ton going on around it. I think both sides are pretty intently trying to do this, but it was never going to be something easy. And the fact that when they got the plan down, And when they started working toward this, that it was almost talked about like it was just inevitable that this was going to happen. I think it got hit back in a big way the last couple of weeks with the challenges that they've run into and actually trying to execute this. But kudos to them. They've been persistent and the dates are popping up and they're charging forward. And I think they're trying the best they can. In your gut, you know, people you've talked to, just seeing where this has gone, do you think it's going to happen? Do you think it's a good idea that it's happening?
I think it will happen, but it wouldn't surprise me if there were a number of players, you know, in addition to the ones we've already seen that choose to sit out. It's kind of a perfect storm of things that are coming together to make this so difficult. You know, first of all, you have, as I mentioned, the injury risk. You have the COVID-19 risk, the health risk associated with this. You have guys that don't love the idea of being in a bubble for 3.5 months and being away from their families, because we're now hearing that if you go to the bubble, then, you know, there was talk about, oh, your family can go with you, but the families can't go until the second round of the playoffs. So these guys are still going to be away from their family and friends for a long period of time. A lot of players were concerned, younger players thinking, okay, so we're just staying in the hotel and we can't leave unless we go play basketball. Like, we can't go enjoy ourselves or really do anything. I think there's some concern about the bubble. You also have the Black Lives Matter movement and guys feeling like, hey, this is going to be a distraction from the Black Lives Matter movement. So, and then now you have all these new cases popping up here in Florida where I'm at, you know, in Tampa, in Orlando, there's a lot of new cases. And I saw today, actually, there was a tweet that was interesting. There were 700 plus new cases in Orange County, which is where Disney's at. And that's more than California, Pennsylvania, that's more than some states. So, I mean, it's pretty wild to see the numbers skyrocketing here in Florida. And I know there's some concern around the NBA about that too. And the NBA said, you know, look, we're going to be in a bubble, so it doesn't really matter. We're going to keep people out. But then you've heard some people kind of poke holes in that and say, okay, well, the Disney employees are allowed to come and go. And yeah, the NBA said they'll never be in the same room as an NBA player. But if they're touching things and, you know, there's still a concern there that they're breaking this bubble. So I know there is a lot of concern, and again, a kind of a perfect storm of events that have really put this in question. But I think, if anything, I think the NBA just needs to kind of tweak some of their rules. They need to either make sure that employees can't, that they have to be tested too, and certain employees have to stay. They need to change some things, but I can't imagine the season will be canceled altogether. As you said, there's so much money at stake. I think, as of a week ago, I was more concerned, to be completely honest, because I thought a lot of players were pushing to sit out. And then, you know, when I talked to guys like Ed Davis or others, you know, they made it more sound like, okay, well, it's a few guys that are being very vocal. And that really doesn't, he's like, I've talked to a lot of players, I've been on plenty of teams. He's a really well-respected veteran. And he was saying every player he had talked to wants to play and is going to play. So, yeah, I mean, I think at this point, more so than the bubble concerns or the, you know, the concern of distracting from the movement, the only way this gets shut down, I think, is if there's just a ton of COVID positive tests. You know, we saw that there were 3 Sacramento Kings players that just tested positive. You know, I think if the players and the teams get to Orlando and there's just a ton of positive tests, I can see the NBA saying, look, we tried to maintain this bubble, but clearly it's not working and we're going to have to just go ahead and abandon the season. That's the only way I envision this, you know, blowing up, because I think all the other concerns, guys have kind of gotten over them and come to terms with the fact that, you know, it makes sense to play for the financial reasons. The NBA obviously is going to, if the season is canceled, players will lose $1.2 billion. The league will lose $2 billion in revenue. If the players choose to back out and that's why we don't play, the owners will rip up the collective bargaining agreement. We probably go into a lockout. So, I mean, there's a lot of things that could really, you know, happen, and really negative things that could happen if the season is canceled from a revenue and CBA standpoint. So, I mean, I think that has to be factored into this too. But if it's a health thing and a bunch of guys are testing positive, that's where I can see the league saying, look, we tried. And look, I will say this, the NBA has done a really good job of, you know, putting together a detailed plan, and guys are going to be tested daily. They're going to have the COVID rings that check their symptoms and vitals and all that kind of stuff. So there definitely is a detailed plan in place, and they're being very thorough. It's just a matter of, can that actually work and keep a lot of guys from testing positive. If they go down there and there's only a few positive tests, they've already said those guys will be isolated and teams will continue play. If there's a ton of tests that come back positive and, you know, the entire league or a big portion of the league is getting sick, then that's where you're going to have to just end this experiment. So that's my biggest concern at this point. But as you mentioned, it's 2020. That's a month from now. We've seen so much can happen in 1 month. So who the hell knows what's going to happen? But that's my take as of right now.
The rings, the hotline, there's a lot of meme potential in some of the precautions here.
We need a reality show. I mean, if we have, especially, I mean, maybe just the Lakers even, with if you have Dion Waiters, J.R. Smith, JaVale McGee, Dwight Howard, I mean, I'm just thinking we have some crazy reality show potential here. Do what the Big Three was going to do, where they were going to put all these guys in the house and obviously televise the games, but also televise like a Big Brother style show from everyone at the hotels. I think we need that.
To think that the way the Lakers went last year and the row of people LeBron brought in last year, that definitely brought him and that team some heat. To think a year later it'd be going so well and then they'd bring in Dion and JR on top of it. Wow. And, you know, not even a lot of noise, because that's what happens when you turn into the one seed the next year. I'm relieving Alex Kennedy from duty. He battled through over 30 minutes here after dental surgery, right?
Right. Yeah. Before the- I'm getting a implant, and so they pulled the tooth out, and so I'm my face is puffy right now, and I'm missing not my front teeth, but one of the teeth to the left side of my mouth, and it's stitched up right now, and I'm getting the implant in 2 weeks, so I'm going to look like a hillbilly for about 2 weeks, and I'm all puffy, but yeah, I mean, I'm doing pretty good pain-wise right now. I'm okay.
We saved you the visual, but we're very vivid with how we describe things on these shows. Listen to the Hoops Hype podcast. You can check him out per usual on Twitter, on hoopshype.com. When the season comes back, I still got my fingers crossed. I'm not rooting against this, but you know, I'm just going to stay optimistic that this thing goes well. I'm dying to see some basketball, even just little things, you know, seeing Enes Kanter rebound. That's a big thing I'm missing right now in the Celtics especially. So, Alex, it's been a long time coming. Thanks for being here, and we'll talk to you again when the season gets rolling.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
I was recording with Taylor earlier. I wanted to pull you in then because nah. – What you got? What you drinking?
Pineapple whiskey.
I had your peanut punch, and the problem was it tasted too like gritty and earthy. I put sunflower seeds in there instead of walnuts, and I think sunflower seeds had too much salt, and then everything I put in there had too much salt.
No, you're supposed to have a whole natural. Like everything is supposed to be unsalted.
Well, everything I put in there was salted, so I think that screwed it up. Made it too dry.
No, you have to use unsalted everything. So you have to use unsalted cashews, unsalted almonds, a scoop of peanut butter.
Use almonds?
Banana. Yeah.
You didn't even put that in there in your recipe.
No, I did. I'll kid you not. I'll go back and screenshot them. or the tweet.
Well, I brought you in here to talk about the fireworks because I'm just curious to hear what it's like.
Isn't it happening? Mike D'Antonisson said it was happening in Peabody.
Really?
That's what Mike told me. Mike.
I hear it in the distance, but it's probably like right over your head, right?
Yeah, I mean, like it's like it happens every night. At least one pops off that I hear. Tonight, I went off. I actually was out tonight, and I was like, hopefully one didn't pop off, but one popped off. So I guess it's becoming a lot better now because de Blasio enforced like kind of police to kind of like, I guess they're fireworks preventers, I guess. I don't know what the fuck this squad is called. But he's basically got police now tracking down on the people that are doing all the fireworking.
See,
firework patrol.
There's probably always a lot around the 4th, right?
No, but this is different, though. This is completely different, though. It's been going on for 2 weeks before the July 4th. So this is just out of boredom. It's out of no, seriously, boredom, anxiety, and yeah, people just don't have any other shit to do besides light fireworks. I mean, they just had like a whole fireworks shootout in Brooklyn. And first go pow, pow, pow. Another goes back, goes pow, pow, pow.
All right. I have a lot of questions. How do people get so many fireworks? They don't just sell them in stores in New York, do they?
No, they don't sell them. I don't know where they get them. I don't know if it's like at a manufacturing place or whatever. I don't know where the fuck they get them from. I don't know if like maybe a friend gets them from like a big manufacturing company and then sells it on the street. Like, I don't know where they're getting this this shit.
So what happened? I think probably 6 weeks ago this started, at least from what I could see. And I heard it here too, like, but in the distance. So it obviously didn't affect me at all. And I don't care. I'll deal with it. But then it just kept going and going and going. And then finally New York, everybody started acting like it was an emergency. And they went outside of de Blasio's house and started beeping their horns nonstop. And that's when I think he finally decided to do something.
Because these people are just, they're doing it from 11, they're doing it as early as 8 p.m. to latest at 4 a.m., 5 a.m. And it's just fucking annoying, right? Like, it's fucking annoying. Like, yeah, pew, 1 hour, pew, 1 hour, pew, every fucking hour, every 30 minutes. And it's like, no one asks for this shit. It's not even the 4th of July. Like, the crazy, you know, it's so counterproductive because it's just like, you know, I didn't hear these much fireworks on Juneteenth. And or you know, and I hope they more happens on July 4th, but sooner or later they're gonna run out. Fuck them. Stupid.
Well, Edgar, my buddy Edgar from elementary school did the chart. I don't know how he did it, but I looked at it and it was all Harlem. Like Harlem is the hot spot from 1/10 up or so, say. Mm-hmm. The map's just covered. It shows like each individual firework and Harlem's just completely covered. It's crazy.
It's fucking crazy. Like I said, it just goes boom, 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 boom. And then it's just like the thing is like I can be on 144th Street and I hear one from 139th Street. And I'm just like I text my friend this. I was like, yo, bro, did you hear the firework go off? He's like, yeah. I was like, oh, cool. That's kind of lit. So we heard at the same time from a distance. So it's stupid, but
I've heard maybe three. So I guess I've gotten off easy. Does this make you more excited to move?
Yes, I am leaving I'm not leaving yet. I'm in the city for 2 years.
No, you're moving to a different part of town though.
Yeah, I'm moving to East Harlem. So thank the fucking Lord.
So you'll still hear it if they're still popping off in a month.
Not really, because that's like Upper East Side, Spanish Harlem. So I don't know how they get down out there.
All right, so we've solved that debacle. Who's going to be your coach next year? Last time we talked, you were flushing the toilet and we were talking about Kenny Atkinson leaving.
Yeah, I mean, listen, man, it's funny that you just talk about it. I just met up with my my Nothing But Nets contributor. So we're chopping it up over dinner at the Bard's Play. Very nice scene, actually. I should do that more often. But he was saying that, so I'm big on Jason Kidd.
What about Ty Lue?
Tyronn Lue is not going to happen. People who say Mark Jackson is a good fit, which I truly think Mark Jackson is a good fit. The only thing is, like, we don't need a development coach. We need a coach to win a championship, right? And that's the thing with Kenny Atkinson. Kenny Atkinson is a very development coach. If Mark Jackson had won a championship with that Golden State Warriors team, I would consider him a championship coach, if that makes sense. But he's developed that Golden State Warriors team into something that's great. And then Steve Kerr kind of just gave him the boost. So it's interesting, right? Because I think Jason Kidd is the good fit. I don't think Tom Thibodeau is a good fit at all. Mark Jackson is just, I don't know. Like, I don't need development. We need somebody to take us to the edge. People have said that maybe, Jacquees Vague. That's his name? Oh, my God.
Yeah, Vasquez, like our Vasquez.
Bogne. This is French, but Lord, I speak French. I don't know how to say it. I think he's probably going to be the head coach.
Well, we'll have to see how he does this summer.
We'll see how he does this playoff, because I don't even know if the playoffs is going to happen in July 22nd. Was it July 22nd?
Yeah, well, they're starting the regular season July 30th or 31st. And then the playoffs will probably start mid-August because they're going to do all those games in a very short span of time.
I think I'm gonna do it in Orlando. I don't know, but not to get off topic, but it's just interesting.
I saw the Knicks are interested in Kidd. They want the good old Tom Thibodeau. He seems like he has his choice if he wants it. And right. All these names just get rewatched. You're talking Mark Jackson. This guy's been talked about with every coaching job since like 2017. And he just hasn't landed on one.
Well, it had to deal with the Golden State Warriors situation. He talked about it on All the Smoke podcast, where it's just like a disagreement and he had to leave. And he was talking about now with him and Jeff kind of doing sports takes and, you know, analysis of the games, he feels much more comfortable. It's not like he can't step in back into the coaching thing, but I think he's finds his more love in analyzing the games and reporting on games lively now. So I don't know if I just don't know who the Knicks are going to go with or what the Nets are going to do, but it's pivotal, you know.
We shall see. Thanks, Obas, for stepping in. Yeah. Don't do it.